The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 45% off site-wide, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is gonna go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Our favorite mid-round picks for 2026 as of Wednesday, May 20th. Now, you got it. You win your leagues with the mid-round picks. You also win your leagues with the early-round picks and sometimes with the late-round picks. But the mid-round picks, those are the ones, those are the ones, Dave, where you really win your league.
I used to say that if you could nail one pick between round 7 and the end of your draft, you were going to have a shot at contending for the playoffs in your fantasy league, because plenty of the guys that you take early, I mean, obviously some of them flame out, but a lot of them are the guys that are the engine of your team. They're the ones that put up the most points, et cetera, et cetera. But when you can find that guy round 7 or later that acts as one of those players, you're going to have a leg up on the competition in your league.
Yeah. And last year, that could have been George Pickens. That could have been Rashee Rice, who was phenomenal when he was playing. And obviously, we're going to talk about him. Could have been Chris Olave. Chris Olave was going in the 80s. Emeka Buka was a good pick for a few games.
Javonte.
Yeah. Javonte was Javonte probably was a late round pick. I'll take a look right now. Javonte Williams was 112th overall. So we're kind of focusing on rounds 6 through 9, 6 through 10. I personally think the mid rounds start in round 5, but we're going round 6 here. It doesn't really matter. Picks in the middle of your draft that could help you win your league. Let's start though with the Rashee Rice news.
You got to address what everybody's here for. Oh, explain the situation.
We're actually about 6 minutes late to start the show today because we off the air were talking more about the dynasty conundrum. We were going to have Dan on to start today's show, but then we thought, why don't we just wait till tomorrow when Heath is also here, because Heath is not on today. So Dan and Heath will hash it out. I mean, Dan is so fired up about this. It is crazy. And I'm just
he was so like ranting and so like loud and like pounding the table and pounding the floor, like the magnets on his refrigerator fall off.
Hey, he's really pissed about this. So he's going to talk about it with Heath tomorrow. We will get you that. I think everybody seemed to enjoy it on Monday because we got a ton of comments about it, and we'll put some finality on it on Thursday's show.
There won't be a finale.
The finale might be Dan walking away from a fantasy league.
Maybe. All right, Rashee Rice. Couple of news items on him. First of all, he's about to serve, I think he just started serving a 30-day jail sentence for violating his probation. He tested positive for marijuana. He also had a cleanup procedure on his knee, the one that he tore a couple of years ago. He tore his LCL, damaged his hamstring, and his PLC, posterior lateral something.
PCL.
No, it was PLC. I looked into it. It's posterior lateral corner, I believe. Posterior
lateral. You say you looked into it, like you opened his knee up and you looked into it?
Yeah. Or Dr. Azer.
I saw PLC and I was like, wait, was that a typo? Did they mean PCL? No, he tore his posterior lateral corner, his PLC.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, he had a cleanup procedure.
I think you're right. I'm looking it up. I think you're right.
I'm right. Thank you for being so surprised. He's going to miss Kansas City's OTAs. He's going to miss their mini camp. And the procedure is expected to sideline Rashee Rice for about 2 months. Jamie, Rashee Rice, the last six games of his rookie year, he averaged 18.5 points per game. First three games of his second season, he averaged 21.6. Eight games last year, he averaged 18.6 PPR fantasy points per game. He has been so consistent and so good since the last six games of his rookie season. And he's, I don't know, a 1-2 turn pick right now. What do you think this news means for Rashee Rice?
You know, it's funny, just reading some other of our peers in the industry, I have to update the Chiefs outlook story that I have on the site. So that'll reflect my thoughts on Rice by the end of the day. I saw somebody say he's now a round three pick. I saw somebody say he's wide receiver 12. I saw a lot of people just saying they're moving him down and some people saying that they're completely out on Rashee Rice. Because at this point now he's another discretion away from another suspension. So you have to take that into account. The fact that he, you know, violated his probation and is serving a 30-day jail sentence is just further proof that he's got to really watch what he's doing off the field. Obviously the injury now for a player that has missed significant time due to injury is another concern. So for me, he was wide receiver 6 prior to yesterday. And really everything had been looking like it worked out perfect for him. Because avoided a suspension for the apparent incident, the alleged incident with, I don't remember who it was, girlfriend, spouse, something, girlfriend, I think, you know, whatever that incident was, I don't want to speak out of turn.
Yeah, yeah.
But he avoided a suspension for violating the code of conduct policy because he's already been suspended once. But the Chiefs did nothing to enhance their receiving core aside from bringing back Travis Kelce. They spent a late round pick on Cyrus Allen. You know, that is not something that was going to take Rashee Rice off the field. They let Marquise Brown go. They haven't brought back Juju Smith-Schuster. Again, not guys that are going to impact Rice, but again, just stripping down this receiving core to its core. And it just looked like, okay, easy to take him at the 1-2 turn or early in round two. And potential top five wide receiver, you just listed the numbers. He is so good when he's on the field and so productive for Patrick Mahomes. So now you have his injury. You have Mahomes coming back from an injury. You have the concern about a potential suspension. There are a lot of risks involved with Rashee Rice. So I think round two is the safe spot for him, or maybe the first time you should consider taking him. I think taking him at the end of round one now is risky. For me, he's going to most likely fall closer to wide receiver 12 than he is to wide receiver 6. So that may change once he gets to training camp and he's healthy and getting closer to week one. So when all drafts actually matter, he will probably be closer to 6 at that point if everything is fine. But you just have to sort of build in the risks now with Rice, which unfortunately we thought were going away. So, for example, I'll just give you a comparison. The Malik Nabers news was a top 12 receiver for me. He's 18 now. Rice will probably be again, after I update my rankings by the end of the day, probably somewhere between 10 and 12.
Dave, what are you doing with Rashee Rice?
I just co-signed pretty much everything that Jamie said. One thing he didn't say is that the Chiefs seem to be focused on being a little better running the football, and that's going to take work away from Rashee Rice. Part of the reason why he got so many targets, and a lot of them were really short targets, were because they couldn't run the ball effectively in the last two seasons. And so now if Kenneth Walker's there and he's doing a good job running the football, it's fewer pass attempts from Mahomes, who's coming back from his injury. And it might be fewer targets specifically for Rice because the run game has a presence now. They'll be able to do their thing. I can't help but think that the NFL is eventually going to have to hand down a suspension on Rice after all the transgressions that he's had over the last 3 years. We don't know for sure that it's going to happen. You're taking a risk when you draft him. When I update my rankings, you'll see him as a 2-3 turn type of pick. Still a top 12 wide receiver in full PPR, not in non-PPR. And I'm going to have a debate with myself, him versus Nabers, and which one I would trust right now to be on my fantasy team. And I think I would lean toward Rice because we don't know that he's going to be suspended. And we know that even though he's coming back from a knee injury or surgery, I don't think it's nearly as bad as what Malik Nabers is coming back from.
I think the other part of this also is this is extremely good for Xavier Worthy's value. Yeah. You know, you want to talk about mid-round picks. Worthy, we thought was going to be the case we thought this was going to be the case from last year. And then he was hurt at the start of the season as well. And so now you have hopefully what we saw in his rookie campaign at the end of the rookie season when Rice was out and Worthy was such a big part of the offense and didn't unfortunately build on that. So I think when you look at third-year receivers and guys that have upside and potential, Xavier Worthy is a great mid-round target at this point.
And that report that the Chiefs limited Xavier Worthy's routes when he came back from the shoulder injury, which was week one, just kind of gives you an idea that he wasn't playing healthy for basically any point of the season. So he definitely has a chance to bounce back. And I'm just doing the math real quick here on Kelsey. Let's see, that was 14 games. Kelsey averaged 12.8 PPR fantasy points per game with Patrick Mahomes last year. So he's been a target of mine in drafts because he goes super late, Travis Kelsey. He's a part of the greater late strategy for me. So yeah, this is a big deal, but there's also a possibility that this is not a deal at all, that Rashee Rice is ready for week one and there's no suspension and he doesn't get into any further trouble. And then he could end up being a steal, quite honestly. Just kind of have to.
Like he was last year when the games that he played.
I don't know. If we get to mid-August and there's no word of a suspension and he's practicing, I think he goes right back up to being a round 1-2 pick.
Yeah, it's very possible.
And then he's not a steal. He's a steal now. So if you're doing best ball now, or I don't know what you'd be doing to draft otherwise right now, sure, he'd be a steal now, but it's May.
I have a bold prediction.
He's also, I'm sure Heath will address this on his show. He's a definite sell in Dynasty because, you know, we heard a lot this offseason about do the Rams extend Puka Nacua and the stuff that he was dealing with this offseason? Like, did the Chiefs extend Rashee Rice? Like, how is that something that they can necessarily take in with certainty at this point? Like, you assume that they get a deal done because they don't want to let him leave, but like, don't give him away. But if you could sell, like Rice comes back and no issues, sell.
Okay. One of the truly unique players for a star receiver, if he is that, got about a 5-yard ADOT every year of his career. It's unbelievably low. And I don't really know how he's been so successful with that ADOT, but he makes it work. Okay, a couple of other items here, or three more. The Saints could be making a decision on Alvin Kamara soon. They have not committed to keeping him on the roster. Michael Penix Jr., he's hoping...
Where does he go and ruin a backfield? There's only one place to me where I think it makes it better because there's a lot of two places that make it better because there's this uncertainty, and that's Jacksonville and Washington. Like when I say make it better, like he can walk in and be the starter right away.
He can go to Denver.
Well, yeah, everybody's going to link him to Denver.
Denver would make it worse because you can make a case for three guys being starters there right now.
I kind of feel like Kamara is just done. I could see him as a pass catcher, but as a primary ball carrier, he hasn't been good at that for 5 years.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm thinking his PPR value.
There's a dot connection that would make everybody cringe, and that's Baltimore. Because Declan Doyle's the play caller there. He came up in New Orleans with Sean Payton. He knows Alvin Kamara. I wonder if Kamara would follow the trail left by many other veteran players that go to Baltimore to finish off their careers. That would obviously stink a little bit for Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry isn't on the field for third downs anyway. And it wouldn't enhance Alvin Kamara's value at all. But I wouldn't be surprised if he goes there to do the exact same role with the Ravens in an offense that Doyle can put in and make familiar for Kamara.
It's a good suggestion by Joey, by the way, who one of our favorite, you know, contributors to our drafts, et cetera. Carolina would be a good spot for him too.
Alvin Kamara will be 31 years old on July 25th. An early happy birthday to Alvin Kamara. 5 straight seasons without a run longer than 30 yards. That's kind of mind blowing. Michael Penix Jr. hoping to be back for week one. He is currently splitting reps with Tua Tagovailoa. And Cam Scadaboo says he'll be ready for week one. All right. Couple things cool to promote. They're both Dan related. Tomorrow is the Dan versus Heath on this show, but also Beyond the Box Score. Make sure you listen to Beyond the Box Score. It's got its own YouTube channel. Just search for Beyond the Box Score on YouTube. They do phenomenal content. Yeah, look, it's long, but a lot of people are really into that. And you know, you can get a long, deep dive on players that you're not going to get anywhere else. They do a terrific job. So make sure you check out Beyond the Box Score. And not every episode is all that long. We tease them for it. We'll take a break. And we'll look at our favorite mid-round picks from Dave and Jamie after this.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 45% off site-wide, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Let's talk about Wandale Robinson. Back-to-back seasons with 140 targets for Wandale Robinson with the Giants. Now he goes over to the Tennessee Titans. Last year, Wandale was the number 28 wide receiver per game in non-PPR, number 20 and half, number 17 in full PPR. And he's currently being drafted as wide receiver 48 on Fantasy Pros, later than where he's being drafted on early CBS mocks. Dave, he's one of your favorite mid-round picks. And again, we're using rounds, what would you say, 6 through 10?
Mm-hmm.
6 through 10 in ADP for these guys. So started off with Wandale Robinson,
who I have currently as a top 75 player in full PPR. I might move him down because I know I can get him past that. But how do you ignore 8.2 targets per game in 2024, 8.8 targets per game in 2025, 9.4 targets per game last year when Neighbors was out in New York? And I'm not overrating Carnell Tate. I think Tate's good. I just don't know if Carnell Tate is going to be what Malik Neighbors was as a rookie. We know that Wandale Robinson was drafted basically by Brian Daboll, has been with Brian Daboll his entire career, now is joining Brian Daboll, who's the offensive coordinator in Tennessee. And Cam Ward needs reliable hands. And he's a short area target. He's not a sexy target. He's not very good in non-PPR or half PPR, but boy, in full PPR, if he's going to catch the ball a lot, I'm going to do the math and have him on my fantasy roster at worst as a number three receiver and someone who might end up being a decent fantasy option like he was last year, like he sort of was in 2024.
Yeah, but isn't top 70, like, doesn't he have to be better than that? I understand he was wide receiver 17 last year, but
he's not going to be that this year. Let's put it this way. I don't think that's his ceiling this year. I know he did it last year. It's a different team, different quarterback, different situation, just the same offense. But again, if I'm drafting him later on, if he's closer to round 9 or round 10, I'm more than happy to get this guy and he can begin the year on my bench. And again, it's only full PPR.
Okay. So Jamie's got a guy that's going around the same time at one of his favorite mid-round picks, and that's Chris Godwin. And who would you rather have, Dave, Godwin or Wandale?
I currently have Wandale two spots out of Godwin.
And Jamie, how about you?
Godwin by about 10 picks.
Wow.
10 spots in the rankings, in wide receiver rankings.
Oh, okay. Not close.
Wow. Yeah.
Can I say... Okay, I watched some tape of Chris Godwin this morning, and I have done a complete 180 on him. I thought he looked absolutely terrible. And in fact, he had a play. This was the last game, second to last game he played. It was a good game. It was a 100-yard game with a touchdown against the Dolphins. Chris Godwin had a play where he had a 59-yard catch, and almost all of it was yak. So I actually timed him running the 40. Because he had about 50.
Okay, yeah. With a running start, or did he actually like stop his feet and turn up?
This makes me like him more. Whatever you're going to finish with.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I don't. I hope it does it. Obviously, it's not the same. It was not with a running start. It was
not like, with a running start.
He caught the ball, and then
turned stopped,
turned upfield.
He turned upfield. Okay. Okay. All right, that's kind of, but yeah, better than a running start. Yeah.
5.36 is what he ran. And then I
was it a straight line?
No. Good point.
Yeah. All right. Then,
but it wasn't like a total.
Throw this in the
dumpster, stat at his 40-yard dash.
I'm just telling you. And then I went back and I watched his tape from the game when he fractured his ankle in 2024. I really think it would be hard pressed to disagree that he looked slower in 2025. I felt that way for most of last year, but it was a reminder. Now I think if you want to give him a little bit of a break because he was coming off that major injury, I get that. But I don't know. Like, I was pretty high on Chris Godwin. Then I watched the tape and I was like, I think I might be high on the wrong Bucks receiver because Jalen McMillan looked a lot better than him in that game. But anyway, Jamie, I understand the case for Godwin. Go ahead and make it.
So it's interesting you mentioned Jalen McMillan because Ted Hurst had a great rookie minicamp and sounds like he's going to be a contributor. So does that mean we're going to see four receivers for the Bucks, or we see the right three receivers for the Bucks? And I think one guy is definitely locked into his role, and that's Emeka Buka. I think the second guy is locked into his role, which has been where his production has been at his best, is Chris Godwin going to be in the slot? Because now you have two guys that could play on the outside in Ted Hurst and Jalen McMillan, and those two guys will be competing for opportunities and targets and playing time. Godwin in the slot to me is one of the best assets that you can get in fantasy at this price. Because if Baker Mayfield bounces back and plays closer to what he did in 2024 when Godwin was good, then I think we're going to get great production from Godwin. He is obviously older. He's obviously slower. He is obviously going to be competing for targets and opportunities. That being said, you said this earlier when you were still in on Godwin before your zigzag 40-yard dash time. I still think he could compete to lead the team in targets. Yeah. Because of just the role that he'll play and his opportunities. I hope it's Abuka because we're all drafting Abuka significantly higher than Godwin. But give me Chris Godwin all day at this price.
Yeah, I think there's just like I don't want to be kind of ignorant to or ignoring the warning signs. Chris Godwin is 30. He's kind of had three bad-ish seasons in his last four. And I think maybe all of them were injury related, coming off major injuries.
ACL, coming off the ACL, coming off the broken ankle.
It wasn't. No, the ACL season was good. Then it was really the next two seasons where he really struggled. And he said that it took him like 2 years basically to regain form. And then 2024 was phenomenal. He was a top five wide receiver per game. He was doing much better than Mike Evans. They both had season ending injuries on the, did Evans come back? I forget. They both had injuries. Yeah, they both had injuries in the same game. And then last year, was it just because he was coming off the major injury? I don't know, but I really think he was a diminished player. He also doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. However, that's I think Evans was a big part of that because Evans gets all the end zone targets. What?
I can't see who said the comment, but Adam, Godwin looked terrible. He had 100 yards and a touchdown with a 59-yard catch.
Hey, listen, this is why you watch
this 59-yard catch. I'm watching it right now. Adam, you sent me the link to it, and we can't show it on
here. What do you think?
Because of copyright reasons. I think the safety for the Dolphins should be cut because he just let Godwin run right past him. But you're right. He is not nearly as fast as he once was. The Dolphins made him look fast. This should have been a good play. It should have been a 20-yarder, but not a 59-yarder. Against other defenses, he doesn't do this. I'm going to play the target game. I think last year, what did he average last year? I know in his last six games, it was around 5.5 targets per game. Obviously, that can go up because Evans is gone, but I don't know if it goes up a ton, and I don't know if the touchdown production becomes a major thing. So I'm going to take my chances in full PPR with Wandale Robinson because I think he's going to get more targets and he'll be able to cultivate more fantasy points with that. But it's close between those two. I don't think that they should be 10 spots apart, but I think that they should be close as number three wide receivers that you draft and you hope that they just do what they have either done. You should hope that they do what they've done before. It's as simple as that.
So I'm glad you said that because this is my argument against Wandale is what they've done before. We've seen one big spike season for Wandale Robinson. Contract year where other guys were injured. And now he's going to a receiving core where I do think Carnell Tate is not, I agree with you, he's not Malik Nabers. But man, the draft capital invested in him says that he could be Malik Nabers or better. And if Tate is what he's supposed to be, and you're still getting opportunities for the other guys there, I don't know if Wandale is closer to his 2023 or 2024 production. Which
is not good. Right. It's not what you want in round 7 or 8 or whatever.
Yeah, I guess I could frame it one other way is I don't really see a lot of big play potential for Wando. He's never been that guy. His explosive play rate is pretty bad. He needs a ton of targets.
Right. He's done it. It just isn't something that he does consistently.
Yeah.
You need him fed targets, yeah. But fantasy sometimes does that. And there are players who you draft and add during the year where you go, well, look, he's just getting the ball so much. You can't help but fall into production. I think Wandale's one of those guys.
Right. So then if I feel that way about Wandale and I feel that way about last year's version of Godwin, I know ironically, because he had a 59-yard catch and run, but I don't think he's an explosive player. At least if he looks like he did last year, then who else in that range could be that kind of guy? I don't know. Ricky Pearsall, Jordan Addison.
Absolutely could be.
Josh Downs.
Absolutely could be. Absolutely could be.
Matthew Golden.
Absolutely.
Xavier Worthy.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean you have
especially
to draft
now with the rights news.
Right. Doesn't mean you have to draft all those guys ahead of these players, but
no, but find your favorite and target them.
Yeah, different profiles. All right, let's
very
take
much
look,
so.
Look, take a look at some quarterbacks here, because Dave, you got a whole list of them that you like, 57th or later. Joe Burrow, who's going about 57th overall, Jalen Hurts, Jackson Dart, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Justin Herbert, and Jamie, you're always highlighting Herbert. So why don't we kick it off with Herbert? And we know the deal. I mean, Dave talks about it a lot. The mid-round quarterbacks, the late-round quarterbacks, they're just phenomenal. But I think, I know Jamie, that you like Burrow better than Herbert, but you like Herbert better than most analysts like Herbert, it seems.
Yeah, just again, looking at Mike McDaniel's addition, Joe out and Rashawn Slater being healthy. If you look at what Herbert did in the six games that Alt was healthy last year, it was over 25 fantasy points per game. The first two seasons of Herbert's career were the two best of his career. He's been chasing that ever since. You know, been about 22 to 23 points at a ceiling. 21 to 23 points has kind of been where he's lived since those first two seasons. So we've been kind of chasing that, you know, those glory years for him. I think this could be one of his best years. I don't know if he gets back to that 29 point per game range, but I just think that if the tackles stay healthy and the receiving core stays healthy, and now you have Mike McDaniel being there, this could be a fantastic year for him, because we saw when Alt was healthy, he was running, and certainly when his foot injury was there. So he has the ability to give you around 400 rushing yards per game. I think it'll probably be in the mid threes. He'll be about three or four rushing touchdowns. But this is a guy that has 4,500-yard potential. He's got 40-touchdown potential. I just think he's one of the best options to have a re-breakout, because I don't think, again, he gets back to those, you know, first 2 year numbers, because that's just too lofty a number to reach. But 26 points per game, 27 points per game, I think you get there. And so I tend to gravitate toward Justin Herbert a lot. You know, I did a magazine draft, and you know, I'm not going to be like Dan and say that there were circumstances that ruined my draft, but I was coaching a baseball game here was my night. I was coaching a baseball game where I have to do, if anybody's familiar with Game Changer, I do Game Changer while I'm coaching. So I'm coaching a game, I'm scoring the game, and I'm doing a draft all at the same time. And so it got to round seven and I was like, oh, I need a quarterback. So I just looked quickly. Jalen Hurts was still there. I've Hurts ranked one spot ahead of Herbert for now. I'm like, okay, I'll just take Jalen Hurts. I'm like, oh, there it comes right back to me. Round later, there's Herbert. I'm like, I should have just waited. You know, like that was one that bothered me, just because I like the value for Herbert so much. And I think the upside is on par with outside of the top two or three guys or four guys for me. He could be as high as QB5. So really excited about Justin Herbert this season.
Wait, what was the thing you used? Game Changers, that we said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. So speaking of Game Changer, just real quick. Guess who's leading his softball team in on base percentage?
Wow. No way.
I am leading the team with five walks, but I haven't walked. I did walk twice the other Monday, but no, I've got some hits. I'm actually batting 600.
Let's go.
That is second highest on the team. Wow.
Are you still batting last, or have they reflected that in your?
They batted me leadoff on Monday.
Let's go.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I think it's a mistake. Small sample size reaction here.
How'd you do?
I drew two walks in the first inning. Unfortunately, the pitcher or the other team just couldn't throw strikes.
Wow, you batted around. That's great.
Then I went 1-for-3. Then I made two pathetic errors in the first inning. Threw my hat down in disgust. Lost all my confidence.
Right field or second base?
Second base. I don't deserve to play second base. I suck. I just really suck. But at least I'm hitting a little bit. We won. We're 6-1.
Nice.
Look at us.
I need video of you playing softball, and especially you getting mad playing softball.
It's embarrassing.
It's so funny that the comment in the chat, maybe the Mets can use Azer. So I have where the Mets were playing a championship game tonight. very, very excited. Should be a fun game.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Good luck.
We're playing at
which age group? Which kid?
Ronin. So it's it's gonna be really good baseball. It's at Little Fenway, which is fun. So there's a park in Delray Beach called Little Fenway, where it's actually a green monster, and it's where Bucky Dent Baseball School used to be. If you remember Bucky Dent, he was you know, had a big hit for the Yankees against the Red Sox. So they've replicated Fenway Park there. It's actually awesome for, you know, little league kids to play at, and it's 15, 16 year old baseball. My son's 14 playing up, so should be fun.
I used to play at that park. That's a cool place. Yep. Dave, I'm not going to ask you about every quarterback on this list, but I do want to ask you about Joe Burrow, who right now looks like a fifth round pick. And I mean, if he came off the board in the third round, I would say, oh, okay. I mean, it's a little aggressive, but I get it. It's in a 6 point per passing touchdown league.
Of course.
I must feel like with Herbert and Burrow, it's at times we've been robbed of how good they can be, because of injuries to their receivers or injuries to them or something like that. But what's the ceiling for Burrow?
2024, he averaged 27 fantasy points per game. That's better than Justin Herbert ever did, and he's going ahead of Justin Herbert. So it makes sense to draft him with that type of expectation. I have started to give the Bengals defense props for their offseason moves, and I wonder if that might take away some of the games that would have otherwise been shootouts that we saw from Cincinnati last year. And is that enough to like run away from Joe Burrow? I don't think so. His receiving core is too good. He's too good. And he's given us spurts of good play each of the last three seasons. He had 23 plus in five of his last six games last year. He was awesome. I think round five is okay to take Joe Burrow. I think I've got him as a top 50 player. So that's like, that might be round four. I don't know if I can necessarily sign off on that, but when you look at other players that are available at the 4 or 5 turn, you might say, why would I take any of these guys that have warts when Joe Burrow is pretty clean other than the injury? And if you get Joe Burrow and you take another quarterback later, or if you're in a smaller league, you don't even have to bother taking the other quarterback because there's going to be somebody on waivers, you'll feel good about Burrow as your starter to begin the year.
I think just the one thing with the narrative of defense getting better, Rams had a pretty good defense last year. Stafford was the MVP. They threw the ball a lot and very successful. So when you have the right offensive pieces in place, so like Dave's been talking about, and I totally agree, Dallas' defense getting better. I don't know if that's a negative so much for Dak and the offense. Like,
right, because they're not going to be a shutdown unit. But it's like I said, there could be a couple of games where, you know, last year, that game against Chicago, maybe it doesn't get like crazy out of control this year, because the Bengals defense is just, you know, I don't even want to say incrementally better. I think they deserve more than that. They're better. It's a better unit as of now.
Yeah. I just think their identity is what their identity is. And it's still it's Joe Burrow throwing the ball all over the place.
We're not waiting for Joe Burrow to fall around eight here. We know what they're doing.
I feel like maybe if we're talking about a top five-ish defense, it could really come into play. You know, the Eagles, for example, I remember.
Yeah, that was the first one that came to mind.
Well, I mean, again, we all think of Denver as a top five defense, and the Broncos were top five in pass attempts.
You're right. They were. They were number three. Seattle, but Seattle was number one, and they didn't throw the ball much. Houston was number two.
They did have the offensive player of the year, though.
I don't
defensive player of the year.
I don't think when you look at the Bengals, you say, wow, the Broncos are going to throw the ball more than them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's when you have the personnel, you're going to use the personnel, and the Cowboys and the Bengals have the personnel, and they're going to still throw the ball up.
Sure. I mean, maybe if there's a team that would be concerning, it might be the Chargers in this discussion. Their defense finished ninth last year, but was so good in the second half of the season. They've got Hampton. They got an offensive coordinator that likes to run the ball. I don't know. You know, it could be.
It certainly could be the case. You know, again, I think when you hire Mike McDaniel, it's not necessarily just to run the ball. It's to be more creative offensively. And now you have the pieces in place to do that. So, you know, when he's banging the table, Magnus not falling in his kitchen, and he's banging the table for Brennan Thompson because, hey, we need more speed on the field. That's let Justin Herbert throw the ball a little bit more too.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a break and talk about a couple of tight ends on Dave's list, some running backs on Jamie's list. We'll be right back. Hey, Jamie, real quick, give me Quentin Johnston. Give me your thoughts on Quentin Johnston as we just discussed the Chargers here. Right now, he's wide receiver 44 on Fantasy Pros, and he's going 98th overall, but on CBS 115th overall, Quentin Johnston.
I think he's a good reminder for people doing their rookie drafts now that sometimes you're going to get somebody who may suck as a rookie, and if the team still believes in him, there's opportunities for that player to still have success. We all thought Quentin Johnston was done after his rookie season, and he looked lost. Comes back his second year, has better production. Okay, yeah, they go out, they get Keenan Allen, they draft Ladd McConkey. It looks like maybe they're trying to replace him because it didn't seem like everything's going to be fine. Then he comes back his third season, has another productive year. Certainly at the start of the year when Joe Alt was healthy, he looked like an absolute monster when Justin Herbert was throwing the ball down the field. So can he get to another level? I don't know, but 12.2 PPR points for this point in the draft, which is what he gave you last year, not going to be consistent because that's just not his game. But he could be a 10-touchdown guy, eight each of the last two seasons without a lot of targets and opportunities to go along with that. So I think just looking at him, you mentioned a couple guys, you know, in terms of big play potential, you know, Xavier Worthy, Matthew Golden. Like, Golden's a perfect comparison. Golden, disappointing rookie season. Path has been cleared for him to have success. I think you just look at Quentin Johnston, like, he's going to be on the field. I don't think Trey Harris takes him off the field. I don't think Brennan Thompson takes him off the field. I think we're looking at the, and Heath even said this, you know, maybe the guy that can compete with Ladd McConkey to lead the team in targets. Like, Quentin Johnson's got still a ton of upside. And so, healthy offensive line, more time to throw for Herbert, I think we could see a big year for Quentin Johnston. So he's a great mid-round, at the tail end of this, but a great mid-round guy to put as your fourth or fifth wide receiver.
You'd love to have a guy like that as your bye-week replacement wide receiver in a pinch flex, something like that. The team picked up his fifth-year option, so they obviously like him.
Yeah, that surprised me.
Me too, yeah. But they did it, and Jamie said it, like about 12 PPR points per game. That was even his average after his last 13 games. Remember last year, yeah. Started on fire. He was amazing. Adam, you were patting yourself on the back. And then he came back down to earth. He actually did. It was very much in line with his 2024 average. I think if you draft him and you say, okay, this is a guy who's going to get me between 11.5 and 12 PPR points per game, man, that's damn good for what area in the draft you're taking him.
I don't pat myself on the back, okay? Other people were patting me on the back for my...
That's because you have little arms. You can't reach.
Yeah, my random Quentin Johnston pick. That's not my style, Dave. Now, about my softball performance. So I... All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about Basil Tootin, Jadarian Price, Harold Fannin Jr., and more after this.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 45% off site-wide, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Harold Fannin Jr. Did I say Jr.? I'll say it anyway. Harold Fannin Jr. going, let's say around 75th on CBS and Fantasy Pros. He's tight end 5 on Fantasy Pros, so big gap between him and the top 3 at least. And George Kittle, a few rounds later, tight end 9 on Fantasy Pros. So these are two guys that you put on your list, Dave, Harold Fannin Jr. and George Kittle.
What I love about Kittle is that I would assume that we're going to draft him and be able to stash him right away because I'd be surprised. Let's put it this way. I'd be surprised if he's ready to go at the beginning of the season. He's more of a middle of the season moving forward type of pick. You're going to draft him, stash him, and then keep your fingers crossed that he's 80% of himself for the end of the 2026 season. Fannin's completely different. I still think he's going to be the number one target getter for Cleveland. I think Todd Monken going to Cleveland is going to open up a lot more for him in terms of efficiency and passing. I don't think he's going to be a little dink and dunk guy as much. I think he'll catch passes a little bit further downfield. That's kind of in line with how Monken operates. And I know they just added a bunch of rookies and we're really worried about what that could do to the 6.7 targets per game that Fannin had last year. I think he gets that many, if not more, this year because he is a very good option, a reliable target for whoever they've got playing quarterback. And it's a team that I think will be either in a bunch of competitive games or chasing points in the second half. And Fannin's just an easy target to lean on and to call plays for. So I'm a big fan of him as somebody to go and get. And if you don't get him, you can get George Kittle. You can take another tight end late. You'll start the other tight end to begin the year, and then you'll unleash George Kittle. And hopefully he doesn't squash us like he squashed a spider when his wife was distressed a week or so ago.
I'm a little surprised that Jake Tonjes doesn't have an ADP right now on Fantasy Pros.
You can pick him up off the waiver wire at the end of the draft. You could literally draft just George Kittle, and then once you can stash him on IR, you pick up Jake Tonjes.
Right now, yeah. I think...
Yeah, but why would you do that when you can probably find a tight end that's got a little more upside than Tonjes?
Well, if we know Kittle's going to start the year on IR, or let's just say he's not, but he's expected back in week 3 or 4 or something like that, I wouldn't mind Tonjes being my last pick just to secure it up, just to lock it up, but fine. Jamie, you've got two running backs who are going back-to-back on CBS and basically Fantasy Pros as well, just outside the top 24. Bajal Tuten and Jadarian Price. Who do you like better?
I like Price better, but, you know, Tuten is not far behind. You know, just looking at his opportunity to start, I think the path to success is easier for Price, knowing that his backups, and look, you can probably make some comps to Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Rodriguez. Both guys have shown the ability at times to be good in backup roles. And in the case of Wilson last year, when he got double digits in touches, he was fairly successful, over 11 PPR points per game, 4 of 6. That he has. You know, Rodriguez did some good things last year in Washington. The difference, I think, is the connection he has with Liam Cohen from their time in Kentucky, and does that add a little bit more weight to the competition for Tuten, plus the fact that Price was a first-round pick, and knowing that Zach Charbonnet is probably going to be out, at least the last most recent report was from ESPN, Brady Henderson, who covers the team there, saying that he could be out until December. So I think Price has a chance. You know, if Price was a starter on a team in college compared to a backup on a team in college, and he was the 32nd overall pick in this situation to a Seahawks team that was so successful running the ball last year and now potentially has over 400 vacated carries, let alone touches, vacated carries that might not be there with Walker and Charbonnet's injury, we would be over the moon for him. So Price, I think, will hopefully surprise a lot of people. I know the work in the passing game is not what you want to see coming out of college, 15 career catches in 3 seasons. But I think everybody values him as a runner. I think everybody understands that the opportunity is fantastic. Seattle may be a little bit more pass happy just because of the personnel shift of losing Walker and not having Charbonnet. But I still think that's going to be the mantra of Brian Fleury, who's coming from San Francisco as a new offensive coordinator, was the run game coordinator in San Francisco. That was previously Mike McDaniel's job. So hopefully we have some success there. So both these guys are going to share to some capacity. I just think the upside favors Price a little bit more, maybe significantly more if he picks things up right away.
I think one of the questions with these guys is how seriously do you take their competition? I know Jamie just alluded to it, but I think, Dave, we could probably look at Tuten and Jadarian Price and say they're probably, at least at the beginning of the season, not going to be the third down back, right? We know who Jacksonville's going to use LaQuinn Allen, and I would assume George Helani in Seattle. Travis Etienne last year had 36 catches on 52 targets. Not a great catch rate. So maybe if Tuten had that same role, maybe he could have 40 catches or something like that. Price would take the under, I guess. But who has stiffer competition in your mind for carries, Bajal Tuten or Jadarian Price?
To begin the year, it's easily Tuten. And then it comes down to how healthy and how nimble is Zach Charbonnet when he comes back. Whenever that is.
Okay. All right. So those are two mid-round picks that Jamie's targeting. Another one that he likes is Chuba Hubbard, who's going in the same range. We've talked about him a lot, so I didn't include him on today's show. I'm going to stick with Jamie here and get to two later round running backs. They're not late round. They're the end of the mid-round, let's say. Jacory Kroski-Merritt and Jordan Mason. Jacory Kroski-Merritt and Jordan Mason. And they're you know, borderline round 9, 10, 11 picks, depending on what site you're looking at. Who do you like better there, Jamie? Jacory Kroski-Merritt or Jordan Mason?
Right now it's Kroski-Merritt, but that could change depending on what this Minnesota backfield looks like by the time we get to camp and what the reports are. I saw someone suggest, which to me makes a lot of sense, like let Mason be the primary runner and use Aaron Jones, who's going to be 31, as a pass catcher, as opposed to what we saw last year when both were healthy, where they were almost rotating drives. But look, Kroski-Merritt should be the starter there. We'll see what Rashad White does. We'll see what Catron Allen does. You know, how much of those two guys factoring in terms of rushing down work, because clearly Rashad White should be the guy working on passing downs. But Kroski-Merritt finished the season strong. And, you know, that was without Jayden Daniels. We know running quarterbacks, while they don't necessarily help the pass catching potential of running backs, they definitely help the running potential of those guys because they open up rushing lanes. So he's somebody I think if you're looking at, you know, Heath talked about this. I don't think he has the Quinshon Judkins potential to lead the NFL in carries, but he should lead his team in carries, and he should be a guy that gets a lot of work if the Washington offense is successful. So in this range, it's easy to take Kroski-Merritt until we get a little bit more clarity about what the backfield is. I think in the case of Mason, like you're waiting for an Aaron Jones injury to maximize his potential. Even though he did have some positive moments when Jones was healthy, his best numbers came in 2025 in that four-game period when Aaron Jones was not on the field. So one is more of a, like if Mason had the job to himself, it would be easily Mason. But I think right now just you got to wait for that injury. And then there's the wild card of Claiborne, running back that they drafted this year. How much work will he get? And do we see three running backs getting work in Minnesota as well?
Cool. All right, Dave, let's get back to you and a couple of the players left on your list. Actually, I think there's only one. Wow. And it's another Cleveland Brown, KC Concepcion. He's wide receiver 52 on Fantasy Pros, where he's going 124th. Concepcion going 103rd on CBS. What do you, if you were looking into the future, in the year 2000, where do you think Concepcion's ADP will be? Closer to 103rd or 124th?
I'm going to say closer to 124th. I think he's going to need some serious buzz in training camp, but I can't rule it out. I think it's very possible that Concepcion steps up and looks like a first round wide receiver. I know that he's an awesome route runner. He's got great speed. They can line him up everywhere. There's an issue with drops that go back to his days in college. We've talked about that. It's going to have to be looked at by the Browns if they can do something to help him concentrate and keep his feet on the ground. When the catch point arrives, he could end up being one of the steals of the draft. I think if there's anybody that can challenge Harold Fannin to be the top target getter this year for Cleveland, it's Concepcion. So he's somebody that I like to target strictly for the bench. Pretty much every other receiver that we've talked about today, I'm definitely taking ahead of Concepcion. But it's just a combination of talent, opportunity. These are usually the two things that matter. Opportunity more important than talent for fantasy. I know the quarterback sucks. He can catch short passes, and he can make plays after the catch. And Monken, like I said earlier, does like to favor downfield throws, and Concepcion can absolutely do that.
I think this, you know, you talked about this, Adam, on the schedule discussion that we had on Friday on CBS Sports Network, like games that don't matter to the public as much, but we're going to be fascinated to watch. And seeing what Cleveland does in the preseason and training camp, obviously early in the season, like Fannin scares me, to be honest, just because like the production from last year, can it be replicated with a less tight end friendly coach? Because Stefanski is so tight end friendly. You factor in, you know, Dave said it in talking about Fannin, like, you know, they have these two rookies. Like, I don't think a lot of people would be overly shocked if Boston is the best pass catcher on this team because of what Dave said. Like, Monken's going to allow them to challenge down the field, and his physical presence is different than both of these guys. And the routes that he'll run will be different than both these guys. You have the wild card of Jerry Jeudy. Does he have anything left to offer? And how much does he factor into all this? And so I'm almost worried that we're going to see too much of a run-heavy offense, because this team defensively will still be in games. You know, this is where I think defense really comes into a little bit more of a factor, especially when you have these, you know, struggling passing attacks or potentially struggling passing attacks, mostly because of the quarterback. So if Judkins is right and they're in these field goal fests and a lot of low scoring games, like, do we get the 120 target potential out of somebody? Because last year, if you recall, Fannin was like 107, right, to lead the team. It was under 110. Like, that's great for a tight end, but if it's 100 for him, 100 for Concepcion, 100 for Boston, like, does Fannin just kind of slot in as like tight end 10, and Concepcion and Boston are like, you know, pushing for wide receiver 35-ish, you know, like, that's would be fine where you're drafting them, but like, nobody is really standing out above the rest until we get that maybe quarterback of the future there for Cleveland.
And the only thing I can push back on here is that under Monken in Baltimore, tight ends had, I think it was a 32% target share each of the last two seasons. Now, that could be a Lamar Jackson thing. That can definitely be a Ravens thing. But I give Monken the benefit of the doubt as somebody who coordinates his offenses based on the talent that he has. The tendencies that he has as far as tight ends go, I don't know if he's necessarily, I don't think we can call him a tight end guy just because he did that last year, but I think he's going to lean on the two rookies that he drafted, his team added under his leadership, along with what they've gotten Fannin, because how do you get away from what Fannin did last year? And so it comes down to me, which receiver is going to be better? I'm putting my money on Concepcion, and I think that Fannin will still have a big role there. And I think Monken will lean on both those guys as much as he possibly can.
Okay. So Dave's list was Wandale Robinson, Harold Fannin Jr., George Kittle, Casey Concepcion, and then a bunch of quarterbacks, Burrow, Hurts, Dart, yep. Prescott, Stafford.
Wait on quarterback.
Yeah. And then Jamie had Herbert, Godwin, Tootin, Price, Quentin Johnston, Ja'Cory Kroski, Merritt, Jordan Mason, and that leaves one more. Mekhi Lemon, 95th on CBS. 84th on Fantasy Pros. That makes Mekhi Lemon wide receiver 38, the Eagles rookie wide receiver. Would you take Mekhi Lemon over Chris Godwin?
No.
Would you take Mekhi Lemon, let's see, over Alec Pierce?
No.
Jacoby Myers?
Am I supposed to be answering these two?
Okay.
So far, no. So far, no.
Jacoby Myers?
I would take him over Myers, yes.
I'd rather have Myers.
Michael Wilson?
I would take him over Wilson.
I'd rather have Wilson.
Obviously, everything we're doing here is assuming an A.J. Brown trade. Last one, Mekhi Lemon or Ricky Pearsall?
Mekhi Lemon.
Rizzy.
That's what they call him?
Yeah.
Really?
When he's not nursing a hamstring injury like he has for 75% of his career.
They don't call him that way. So they do call Ricky Pearsall Rizzy.
But when he's sidelined, he's back to being Ricky.
Okay.
Maybe even Richard. But when he's on the field and he's doing his thing and he's healthy,
Richard.
Rizzy.
All right. Mekhi Lemon, Jamie, what do you like about him? And when what round do you think is appropriate for him?
I would start looking for him in round 7. You know, I think just looking at the opportunity of no A.J. Brown, and I think obviously everybody should be excited about Devontae Smith. But does Devontae Smith just absorb a significant amount of targets that A.J. Brown is vacating, or just a portion of the targets that A.J. Brown is vacating, which is about 124? So you got to factor in Marquise Brown. You got to factor in Dontayvion Wicks. You obviously have to factor in Dallas Goedert. I don't think the Eagles trade up into the first round to get Mekhi Lemon to not use him. The Biletnikoff winner, obviously fantastic with what he does. The ball in his hands after the catch, can play inside, can play outside. You know, you want to go back to a previous podcast. I completely agree. Jake Seely on our show is saying that the narrative that Jalen Hurts won't throw over the field or won't have success throwing over the field is very overblown.
Over the middle of the field.
I'm sorry?
Over the middle of the field.
Yeah, middle of the field. What'd I say?
Over the field.
Oh, over the middle of the field. Excuse me. you know, Lemon will have success, you know, doing those routes. I think he will be an amazing playmaker for them. And so just excited about Mekhi Lemon's landing spot and opportunity. So I think there's going to be an opportunity here for him to challenge to be the best rookie wide receiver this season.
Oh, he's so good. Love Mekhi Lemon.
It's really true. I hate the landing spot. I think we're a year away. I think once Goddard's out of there and it's clearly Devontae Smith and Mekhi Lemon is the top two target getters, that's when we're going to see Lemon break out.
I just hope that they, if they could just go back to being, you know, something like 23rd or 25th in pass attempts, then I could deal with it, you know. But the last couple of years, the Eagles have been toward the very bottom. I think 2024, they were last in pass attempts. And if anybody cares, I can look it up. Dave, let's have a look it up fight.
I'm not looking it up.
Oh, wow. You always
it look. Sounds about right. Even if they're not dead last, they're probably bottom five.
They were 24th. All right, I'm sorry.
They are bottom eight.
Yeah, but that's good enough. You know, all right. The Eagles had 497 pass attempts in 2025. In 2024, they had 448. The last time they had a really good pass offense was 2023. Let's see how many pass attempts they had there. They were 24. They had 563. So that is actually a pretty far cry from what we saw last year. 563 pass attempts is not going to be amazing, but it would be really big for the Eagles. It would be a big development for them and make Lemon. I just don't see them getting back to that. That was pre-Barkley.
Yeah, it means something's wrong with Saquon.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get there. But look, I mean,
I do like their new play caller. I think the new play caller can make the passing game. I mean, anybody could do better than what they had last year, but I think Sean Mannion's going to be a good play caller for them.
And look, this version of the Eagles offense has had AJ Brown be a stud and Devontae Smith at least be someone worth rostering every week and starting a lot of weeks. Yeah. So if you're getting that with Lemon in the 80s or something like that in the ADP, that's pretty good. Okay. Good luck, Jamie. How are you feeling about tonight?
I feel good. You know, we definitely have pitching, which is always important. So we beat this team earlier this year on the it was a crazy game. So the kid that's starting tonight was dominant through the first three innings. He had a pitch limit. So when he hit his 50 pitches, he left with a 6-0. We had a 6-0 lead. The kid that I brought in place of him was not very good, walked a couple guys, hit a couple guys. And then we had a very scary collision in the outfield where my son is 5'11", 160. And he ran into a kid that's probably about 5'7", 120. Ugh. And sent him to the hospital, actually.
Oh, no.
Just to get checked out, but thought he might have broken his ribs. It was nasty. Like just a ball that was just hanging in the air. They're both going for it and not a lot of communication. Tie ball game come up with bases loaded, two outs. And my son, it was a very windy night and he hit a ball. He's a big lefty. So he hit a ball that I'm coaching third off the bat. I thought it was going to right field. And I'm like, I'm hoping the kid just misplays it. It hung up in the air and ended up landing behind the pitcher's mound.
Whoa.
The second baseman went back to chase the ball, and then the pitcher didn't move. If the pitcher moves, he catches it. But ball lands right in between that like Bermuda Triangle of – you would have dropped it for them. But right in the Bermuda Triangle of pitcher, first base, second base, and we end up walking it off. It's stupidest walk-off I've ever seen.
Wow. So, let's say not a windy day.
Somebody said in the chat, the kid was fine. He was okay. Just went to get checked out.
Good. That's good. You know, I honestly have a little affinity for the 5'7", 120 pound kid in this fight. You know, if a player hits a fly ball, like a routine fly ball to right field, what age are they? 13?
They're 13 to, I don't think we have any 16 year olds, 13 to 15.
Oh, all right. What percentage of those balls are caught?
In tonight's game or in general?
In general.
65%.
Oh, I could do that. All right. Well, good luck. Sorry that
I just got an email for another dynasty league that I'm in.
Uh-oh.
And the commissioner said, make sure to cut at least three players so your roster is valid before or after the draft.
Is that Heath's league?
No, this is a completely different commissioner, completely different league. None of you guys are in it. And he still wants you to make cuts before the draft.
What's wrong with
that? So it is not just a Heath thing. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that the rules, and he's also sent an email to everybody in the league. So now I'm going to text him and say, hey, you better make sure everybody sees this email so that no one's caught off guard when our draft starts.
I agree.
Did you finish your draft yet, Adam and Heath's league?
Yeah.
Your four picks?
Oh, this is a good topic, actually. We did our rookie draft, obviously. Let's see. I had the third pick? No, the fourth pick. Let's look at the draft results. Draft results. I took Jordan Tyson in round one.
Great.
It's a, by the way, it's a tight end premium league. You know, I've been meaning to bring this other guy up that gets so, I don't want to say overlooked because I get the reasons why, but there's no enthusiasm about him. And he was drafted before a lot of players who have more enthusiasm. I took Jeremy Bernard in round two. What was he, the sixth wide receiver drafted in this in the NFL? Seventh, maybe? I know Pittsburgh wasn't the best landing spot, but I took Jeremy Bernard right after Antonio Williams, for example, went, and Antonio Williams was a third-round pick.
You took him after Stribling, right?
Yes. Stribling was a first-round pick.
Yeah, Dan drafted Stribling.
Then I took Oscar Delp in a tight end premium league. I was actually pretty excited about that pick in round three. That was 28th overall. And Cole Payton in a I was gonna take like Cyrus Allen for the Chiefs, but I decided Superflex League. I took Cole Payton in round four.
Yeah, he just like Lemon ended up in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
I don't know when he's gonna get a chance to ever play, but he was fun at the Senior Bowl for a couple of days. He was the best quarterback there.
Is it so?
I went into this draft with I need receivers badly, and then at nine, like you said, tight end premium. Sadiq was there. That was easy. To take him at nine. I was surprised he was still on the board. Same. Then round two, I took Singleton. I was like, just best player available. Then round three, it was like a gift. Catron Allen was still there. So got him nice. In late round three. And that's so crazy. I'm like, this just fell the right way, but my receiver's just hurting. You know, I had on this team Jalen Waddle, Cortland Sutton, and Troy Franklin. And I may have to play all three of them at some point.
Well, you can play a lot of flexes in this league. It's the positions aren't quite as important. I want to say something about Carson Beck for those of you doing dynasty drafts. I don't know if I said this on the air, but I've been pretty negative on Carson Beck because I quite frankly, he can't move. He's pretty much immobile. And, well, it's a stretch, but he's not going to run. And I think he's going to struggle if
he
there's
ran pressure. For the game winning touchdown against Ole Miss to put Miami in the national championship.
I also had serious doubts about his arm strength, especially on deep throws. But it is worth noting that he had major elbow surgery in 2024. So it's possible that he didn't have his full arm strength for 2025. So before you draft Carson Beck in your Superflex League, go watch his Georgia tape and see what you think of his arm. But I can just say the deep balls he threw at Miami were not, in my opinion, they were not NFL caliber at all. So I've been pretty negative on him, but maybe I'm not cutting him enough slack for coming off a major, major elbow injury that he had at Georgia in 2024. Okay, that is it for today's show. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow with Dan versus Heath on Fantasy Football.
Paramount Podcasts.